we walk into them when the show starts, it's Thursday. And before the show ends, it's next Thursday. So only a week, only 7 days. But in 24 hours, in 36 hours, in 96 hours, oh my God, a life, a whole world can change. And it does in a matter of these days. So I think that's a good way to kind of describe the play without giving too much of the plot, but also hopefully being intriguing enough so that people realize that this is a cautionary tale for what's going on today in terms of how we incorporate and include and accept brutality and violence in our everyday concepts. This is a part of how life was for these two men, but it doesn't have to be. We need to be looking at this as a cautionary tale. We need to be watching and making sure that our daughters and sons don't end up like this. We need to make sure that there's safeguards around our children. I just read last night, when our black children's childhoods going to be sacred? When am I going to be able to go out and see and know that those children that are on that playground just a mile away from me, of us right now, are going to grow up remembering having played? These children in Gaza right now will never have that memory. They will only have the memory of before 2022. They won't be able to talk about 23 and what joy, because there's only horror and terror and pain right now. So we have to understand that this is not just some old surface level type of thing. What I feel Susan Lloyd Parks was speaking about was the war that is really happening in our everyday lives, and we don't magnify it because it's not on the news, it's not making a lot of money, it's not sensational, but we are living in a war of survival, of trying to keep a family and trying to keep afloat and trying to keep alive in a world that doesn't want you to live.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, and I'm so sorry, but like I just have to chime in. At the end of the day, this is two black men against this capitalist, neo-fascist society that they live in. And it's like, Frantz Fanon talks about like the black schizophrenia. And so there's a lot of freneticism in the show. And I think it really captures like the internal like hyper arousal that blackness is in this country. It is a constant fight or flight. And I think Yo does a wonderful job of capturing that by just sort of letting us, during the process, just letting us go all the way there.
Because I needed you all
to go.
Yeah.
Come on, man, we can team up, you and me. Throw in the cards, three card and lick. Look out, me clean up, you and me. You throw the cards and I be a stick man. The one in the crowd who looks like just an innocent passerby, like just another player, like just another customer, but who got intimate connections with you. The dealer, the main man, the one throwing the cards. I be the one that draws in the crowd. I be the one that makes people want to put their money down. You do your moves and I do mine. I turn the heads, you turn the cards, and
there's more to that.
We could be a team, man. Raking the money. There sure there'll be some cats out there with fast eyes, some brothers and sisters who will watch real close and pick the right card. So some days we will lose money. But most of the days we will come out on top, pockets bulging, plenty of cash, and the ladies would be thrilling.
I was so proud of and excited by the way that you all were interested and intrigued by the work that I really was curious to see where you all would go with it without really kind of me getting in the way. And so, and especially the youthful, like frenetic rah of Booth versus the more earthbound kind of staid behavior of Lincoln, that was an interesting conversation. But then watching how it bounces off of each other, because there's times when you're more calm and more, you know, focused and more grounded, whereas he's more up and not connected or not grounded in the way that he might have wanted to be. So I think that you speak on it. Man, I can't remember the exact line, but there are moments in that production, there are moments on stage of such beauty, of such vulnerability that you and your play your partner
shout
provide.
Out to Will Bryson.
Shout out to Will Bryson, who should be here. We're a happy family. the three of us, and it was the joy of my life to be able to walk into rehearsal and see your two faces, knowing that no matter what the day had brought to us that day, and there were times when we was like, yo, all three of us were coming in, all bedraggled. We looked at each other, we realized the work at hand, and then, you know, we got to it. And I think that more than anything, the respect and the love that we have for theater, for good work, the integrity that we brought to it, I think, you know, that was really, we spoke about it, we talked about it, especially in those first few weeks of rehearsal. Because we were like, you know, dreaming about what we wanted to see and what our hopes were going to be and how were we going to be. And for me, that's a very important aspect of any kind of undertaking. How do you envision it being? What do you want to see at the end? And so for me, it was very clear. I wanted people to feel touched and healed and jostled when they walked out of the production. And that's exactly what we're getting. We're getting audiences who aren't quite sure what to do with this production, who aren't quite sure how to navigate what they thought they were seeing to what they ended up seeing.
Why do you think they left us, man?
Moms and pops? I don't think about it that much.
I don't think they liked us.
No, that ain't it.
I think there was something out there that they liked more than they liked us. And for years they was moving against, they was struggling against moving toward that more like something. Each had something they was struggling against. Mom had hers and pops had his, and they were struggling. They moved us out of that nasty apartment into that house. It was a house, a whole house. It wasn't perfect, but it was a house, and they bought it, and they brought us there, figuring that we could be a family in that house. And those things, those two separate things, each of them was struggling against, they would see all that and just let them be. They would see the house and be impressed and just leave them be. They would see the job Pops had and how he shined those shoes every night, shine them even if they ain't even needed. They would see all of that and just let him be. And the things that Mom was struggling against, they would see the food on the table every night and hear her voice when she reads to us sometimes. And the clean clothes, the buttons sewn on all right. They would see all that and just let her be, just let us all be, just regular people living in a house.
The Detroit Repertory Theater, it's been around for 67 years. However, a lot of us don't know too much in-depth information about what's been going on there for the last 67 years, unless you're like really into theater and the arts and culture and beyond. Talk a little bit about the history and the legacy of being Black performers there on those stages.
So, I mean, one of the things that I have to point out, first of all, is the Detroit Repertory Theater is not a Black theater.
Mm.
And a lot of people, you know, misstate that because there's so often Black people on that stage.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that I think is very interesting about theater in Detroit, because it's a majority Black city, but most of our art doesn't reflect the who is it that's here. You know, during the Motown era, of course, it was easy. Somewhat so with the hip hop, but even our hip hop, the ones who you know, they're not. I mean, Eminem ain't Black. Some people, I mean, people gonna say he Black, you know, whatever, but my point is that there is a community, and Black stories are powerful. Black stories need to be told. Black theater needs to be lifted up and celebrated. And when 67 years ago, Bruce Milan and Barb Busby decided to establish a theater company, these were two white folks who said, we're not going to put ourselves on stage only. They could have. And there are companies who do. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say that these two people said, we're going to audition and put the best person on stage. Bruce directed me in a show where two sisters and it was just a random kind of crazy family. I was directed in another show where Leah Smith, who I've known since high school, she and I are like sisters in a way because we've known each other since we were teenagers. We played sisters, and it was the most natural thing. Of course that she would be the person who works this particular part of the family. How she played that character, how I played that, I think our sisterhood was perfect, and nobody batted an eye. So that could be sometimes considered performative, but I don't think that the Detroit Rep did it in a performative kind of way. They put performers on stage, and to the point where people think it's a Black theater. even though Bruce Milan was there behind a bar every night, even though Barb directed so many of the shows. And I love these two people and their ancestors now, and I look to them as ancestors because they guided me in my profession. They weren't my biological ancestors, obviously, but they're my theater ancestors. They were people who guided and cared for me and gave me love and support in the way that a parent does towards any kind of thing. And so I think that when you think about Black theater, knowing that there's a place like the Detroit Rep is a good thing, but we also should have Black theater companies. There are Black theater companies coming online. I'm connected to one of them. My husband and I have founded a theater. I know that there are other people in the city of Detroit doing Black theater, so I'm proud of that, and I'm connected to it in a way that I think that should be organic. It should be who you know, what you're doing. Mm-hmm. Oh, such and such is over here doing that. Okay, send somebody over there. They need support. Go support them. Oh, they don't need any help. Okay, well, then they good over here. Well, then let's go support these people who are starting this thing over here. We need to be able to do that because we do have stories. And we do have a way of telling stories that's not like anybody else. When a white person writes a play about Black life, people going to look at it cross-eyed because how you going to tell that story? They did that 50 and 60 years ago. We got Porgy and Bess. We don't need them more.
Yeah, I echo, I think, a lot of what Yo said. It's really funny about that misconception of the Detroit Rep being like a solely a Black theater. But it's, as a Black performer, I mean, you know, any actor knows, performing at the Detroit Rep, some shows it's going to be like you're in church. Every 3 seconds, somebody is like having a fit or we at the right. I had a lady after every line. She like has something to say. Ooh, Lord, you better say it, boy. But and we're not at the Rep. We're not snooty about it. I mean, you know, we're talking about. Let's go back to like the penny seats of like, you know, where it's like the this is like the kind of theater that we produce where it's theater for the people. And there's a lot of sterility that goes on, especially in like contemporary art spaces where it's like, yo, why am I walking in here? And it's like, I feel like I'm in a dentist's office. You walk into the Rep, we have the original finishing on our bar. The carpet is like this warm blue and like you feel at home. And we have been the cheapest and most accessible theater for 67 years. We're not charging people $50 to come see a show because theater is for everybody. Yeah, and on the note of just the Black theater community here, I mean, I've only been here for really a year, a little over a year, and just the support and the expertise. And I mean, we have some super dope theater artists here, man. I'm proud to be a part, because again, I work at the Rep. And so I'm proud to be a part of an institution that takes risks on Black artists, period. And that's kind of always been the mission.
And I think that you do also speak to that. You see that especially in the audiences. You don't see just one kind of person coming through the door. You see everybody. You see the grandmamas who's got walkers. You see little kids coming in, 8, 9 years old, experiencing theater for the first time. You see the aunties and the uncles. You see folks who've never been to theater before. You see theater people who grew up in theater, who that's their every day. So the whole span of life comes into the theater. That theater, and you get it in the audience. You hear it, just like you said, Will, in terms of the responses. Wow, you know, you get that. I mean, there are moments on stage when it's really like a back and forth, a call and response between the audience and the performers. And I don't know that the show was meant to be that way, but I know that every time it happens, it feels so good, and it's so awesome to feel that the show is eliciting such a response, that it's requiring that they say something, that they gotta testify. That's right. Uh-oh. You know, I mean, we know something's going on, and you
Man,
hear
that feels good.
That's powerful. Because I mean, especially when you realize that's the reason why you got on stage. That's the reason why you auditioned. You wanted to tell stories. You wanted to bring to life a character. You wanted to be on stage and have people watch you, and get so wrapped up into the thing that you're doing, the story that they're telling, that they forgot that you're just 5 feet away from them, and you're not for real that person. That you're gonna, at the end of this 2 hours or whatever it is, you're gonna go home. I'm gonna go home. We're gonna cook our chicken dinners or eat, you know, go home and fold clothes and or go write another play. Right. You know, we're gonna go to do these real quote unquote real life stuff. But just now, we just watched real life.
It's my place. You don't got no place. Cookie, she threw you out and you can't seem to find another woman. You lucky I let you stay.
Every Friday you say mi casa es su casa.
Every Friday you come home with your paycheck. Today is Thursday and I tell you, brother, it's a long way from Friday to Friday. All kinds of things can happen. All kinds of bad feelings can surface and erupt while your little brother Booth waits for you to bring home your share. I got my Thursday head on, Link. Go get the food.
You ain't got no running water, man.
So?
You ain't got no toilet, no sink.
Bathroom's down the hall.
You living in a third world, fool.
Against the kingdom's throne.